Thanks, Ethan, and good afternoon, everyone. Now, I know this is the last session just before lunch, so I'll try to keep it brief as well. Now, before I start, a point of clarification. So, by alternative, I'm talking here about an alternative to traditional reinsurance. So, in this case, it's the transfer of risk to the capital markets. Now, the transfer of risk to the capital markets is mostly represented currently in the form of cat bonds. So today, I'm going to talk about, firstly, what they are and why we use them. Then I'm going to talk briefly about the current state of the cat bond market and then look at it from an Australian perspective. Finally, I'll touch briefly on a couple of developments beyond cat bonds. So why consider an alternative to the traditional reinsurance market? Now, as you would have heard from presentations yesterday and earlier today, that particularly in recent years, there's been a large number of natural disasters. The traditional reinsurance market has handled this quite well. It is broad and diverse, but is not unlimited in terms of capacity. So the capital markets bring a diversity and scale of additional investors. The reinsurance market is also sometimes a bit volatile, both in terms of pricing and the availability of capacity. So for seeding insurers, the capital markets offer a sense of choice. So what are cat bonds? Well, first of all, it's a fixed income security which allows a transfer of insurance risk from insurers, reinsurers, and even corporates to the capital to investors via the capital markets. Now, the risk transfer mechanism operates largely in the form of either loss of coupons and or principal for the investors. And this is on the occurrence of predefined events. For the investors, they generally receive a benchmark rate of return, such as LIBOR or Euribor, and on top of this, a spread, which is essentially the insurance premium for taking on that risk. Now, cat bonds have been around for more than 15 years and is a reasonably well-developed market. So let me take you through a typical structure for a cat bond. So in the middle, we have a reinsurer, a dedicated reinsurer, which is essentially set up as a special purpose vehicle. The reinsurer in this capacity acts similar to a traditional reinsurer and enters into a risk transfer contract with a ceding insurer, which we call the sponsor. In return for this, they receive periodic payments in form of premiums. In order to take this risk on, the SPV, or the reinsurer, in turn issues notes to investors. The investors subscribe to these notes, and the proceeds are deposited into a collateral account. The collateral is typically managed by banks such as BNP Paribas. The proceeds from the notes are typically invested by the collateral manager in permitted investments, and these are typically US treasuries. So for the investors, similar to a traditional fixed income security, they can typically expect a coupon, and this is usually represented by the periodic payment of premiums plus the investment returned on the collateral. And then at the end, the return of principal. Now this, of course, assumes that during the period of cover that there was no occurrence of the predefined events. Now, if the predefined event does occur, then the SPV would make payment out of the collateral account to the sponsor. So this would essentially represent the coupon loss or principal loss to the investors. So why use cat bonds? Now, on the screen, I've listed a number of reasons for both sponsors and investors. I'm not going to run through all of them, but rather touch on a few pertinent points. So first of all, one of the key differentiating factors for a cat bond is that it is fully collateralized from day one. It's usually structured on a fixed price basis over a multi-year period, and typically this is 3 to 4 years. I haven't included this in the list, but another feature of cat bonds is that it can be structured either on an indemnity basis or a parametric basis. So the loss on the cat bond could either be directly related to the loss suffered by the cedent, or it could be based on industry loss index, or factors such as the size of an earthquake as measured by the Richter scale. So clear in this case that the loss from the Cat Bond would not necessarily be the same as the loss actually suffered by the sedent. Now, for the investors, there are a number of reasons why they're interested in Cat Bonds. First of all, it represents an uncorrelated asset to other asset classes, and this is particularly attractive. So clearly, the occurrence of a natural disaster is unlikely to be correlated with a fall in the stock market. The yields on cat bonds are typically quite attractive as well, and particularly in this current low-yield environment, investors are keenly seeking cat bonds to diversify the returns. As I mentioned before, the cat bond market is reasonably well-developed, and so it offers a large range of different types of perils which are represented by the cat bonds, different types of triggers and maturities. And so from an investor's perspective, they can pick and choose the type of exposures they want to have based on the risk appetite for their portfolio. So here I've included a case study based on a cat bond that BNP Paribas was involved in recently. Looking at the size of the cat bond, this one was about 100 million euros. And this is fairly typical of cat bonds. They tend to be in the sort of 100 million to 200 million size range. It was rated by S&P, and again, typically cat bonds are rated by one or more rating agencies. In this instance, the multi-year cover spans 3.5 years. In terms of the trigger, rather than an indemnity base, this one was based on an index weighted by various exposures by country and in terms of contributions to windstorm index. Then lastly, also typical of cat bonds, that there's usually a third-party modelling agent, and in this case it's AIR. So now if I can talk broadly about the cat bond market in general. First thing to note that it is heavily weighted towards US perils exposure, particularly US wind or hurricanes. Now, the implication of this is that if you issue a cat bond which has exposure to US wind, you're likely to pay a higher spread, even though the actual risk, and this is determined by the attachment probability and expected loss of the cat bond, at a similar level to other bonds. Now, what that actually means is that so if you're looking to issue cat bonds which have exposure to what we call diversifying perils, so essentially ones which are not US wind or US earthquake, then issuing that, you tend to be able to issue that at a lower spread. Looking at the size of the market, currently the total outstanding of the market is around $15 billion. And we expect for this year that new issuance is going to be around $6 billion. Now, just another point of clarification. On the pie chart on the bottom right, I don't know how clearly you can see this, the 22% represents the direct US wind exposure, but the US wind exposure is also captured by the 43% in peak multi-peril. So combined, you can see the dominance of exposure to US wind. So what about an Australian cat bond? Now, we think for prospective sponsors from Australia, in terms of perils exposed to Australia, we think that a structure is feasible, particularly for Australian earthquakes and cyclones. There are good third-party models available in the market. And the issue can also be in Australian dollars. As I mentioned before, this would be seen by investors as a diversifying peril, and so investors are particularly keenly seeking this type of exposure. In terms of achieving regulatory recognition from a capital relief perspective, we believe that a Cat 1 structured from Australia will most likely need to contain certain structural features, and so this may include an indemnity trigger being denominated in Australian dollars and covering a broad range of perils. So moving beyond cat bonds. Now, so far, when I've talked about cat bonds, I've talked about a public issuance. But cat bonds can also be issued on a private placement basis, what we call cat bond light. The benefit of that, so in this instance, the sponsors interacting directly with a very small handful of investors, allows a much more bespoke structure to the actual cat bond itself. and also generally reduces the issuance cost and time to execution. Main drawback, however, is that the transferability on the secondary market tends to be somewhat limited. Now, we believe that as the ILS investors become more and more sophisticated, that there will be a greater number of private placements going forward. The second development in the cat bond space is largely around the use of a segregated cell company. So what this entails is essentially a special purpose vehicle setup, or the SPI in the middle on the chart down the bottom. That SPI would write an industry loss warrant contract with the seeding insurer, and then in turn it would offload that onto investors via the use of notes or swaps. What then, in terms of the different contracts that's written with different insurers and different investors, these are completely segregated, even though they're all written by the same entity. The key benefit of this is that it simplifies the setup structure, setup process, compared with traditional cat bond. So, in summary, I've talked very briefly about what cat bonds are and why we use them, and a little bit about the market. Thanks very much for your attention, and happy to take questions.
Hello. So you mentioned that cat bonds are S&P rated. Does the S&P rating reflect the inherent default risk of the company issuing the bond?
Can you just tell us your name and the company?
Sure. So my name's Keith. I'm from Finity Consulting. So with regards to S&P rating, does the cat bond rating reflect the probability of default of the company, or is it the risk associated, its exposure to the perils, so the probability of default from that respect, or both?
Thank you. Is this on? Yep. It's generally the latter. So if you look at individual cat bonds, they're generally seen in the market on the basis of the attachment probability and the expected loss. And so the more remote the probability, then the less likely you're going to have a capital loss on the cat bond. Not so much on the actual sponsor itself, because bear in mind also the bond itself is generally collateralized. So again, another area that might affect the rating would be the use of the underlying collateral where it's invested. So it's generally typically invested in fairly safe assets, essentially in order to mitigate credit risk. I mean, that was the reason why you've got the collateral in the first place. Right. But if that was invested in other permissible assets, which are maybe seen as slightly more risky, then again, that will also potentially affect the rating.
Okay, so it's a combination, really, but more geared towards the perils that it's exposed to.
Absolutely, and so S&P would review the model of the perils. Say in the instance I showed was by AIR, so they'll review it for probability of actual loss on the bond.
Okay, thanks.
Do you want to use this mic?
Mark Hayden from Berkeley Reed. Just to add to that point, I think that there's been two bonds which have actually had losses from the peril that they're insuring happening, but there's actually been losses from four bonds from investments going bad, which was when Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, whenever that was, 2007. So the S&P definitely nowadays take the quality of the investments, or what the permitted investments are, under the contract.
Sorry, it's Thomas Cherian from Willis Re. Just wondering on the cat bonds, have you had any conversations with APRA trying to explore the possibility of them allowing cat bonds locally, and what's the sort of key hurdles that you're coming across, particularly given the new sort of logic standards are quite geared towards the ratings and the credit quality of the counterparties, and they've got quite strict rules around where the cash is held, and they need quite a substantial local presence for some of these things.
Sure. Not so much directly with APRA, but certainly reviewing, particularly under the standards in terms of LAGIC, I think it's actually quite supportive of things like Cat 1, because first of all, because it's fully collateralized, then it's certainly viewed positively if you look at it from the standards perspective. There are challenges. So as I mentioned, for example, having a multi-peril coverage, that's probably one of the bigger challenges. Typically, cat bonds, for ease of convenience, in terms of analysis by the investors, you know, they might have, say, a couple of perils, but where in order to get full capital regulatory capital recognition, you might need to actually include quite a number of perils, including sort of earthquake, cyclone, bushfire, flood, and now you're starting to introduce a whole number of different models. And in some cases, for example, flood, there isn't actually a credible third-party model for flood at the moment. So, I mean, yes, so that, for example, would be a structural challenge. But we do think, so certainly I know over the next sort of couple of years, we do expect a flood model to be developed for Australia. And so certainly we think, and also in terms of pricing of the market at the moment is quite supportive as well. And so we do think in the coming years or over the short term that overcoming these sort of structural considerations and also in terms of once the logic bends down and as the regulator improves their understanding of these cat bonds, I think the environment just becomes more supportive.
I'll keep it brief. Sue Train from Suncor. Just following on from the previous question and working with APRA, what about the issue of longevity? I mean, assuming a bond has a loss, the investors all run away, where does that leave us as purchasers? And with regard to reinstatement, where are the investors going to be when they've had a loss?
Sorry, I missed the first part of that question.
Reinstatement of cover, where's the longevity coming from?
That can be a feature of the cat bonds as well. So it is possible. We think, but it's actually, again, this makes it more challenging because as you start to have a cat bond, bear in mind there has been one from Australia, so from an investor's point of view, they're not very familiar with Australian risk, so it's them trying to get used to it. And so suddenly if you bombard it with the fact that it needs to be denominated in Australia, having all these perils, and on top of it requiring reinstatement, then, yeah, it will make the investor base a lot smaller. But in terms of, say, a traditional US issuance where clearly there's a lot more of them, and so the investors are much more familiar with them, there have been cat bonds where it does include a reinstatement component.
Okay, one more.
Hi, Kate Bible from APRA. So maybe I could add some comments to that. I'm here. Definitely under LAGIC, we've specifically added a provision in the standard and provided some guidance recently around use of cat bonds. We're definitely open to considering including them in the ICRC. The main areas where we're focused are outlined in the GPG, so I won't dwell on them, but the main consideration is whether they actually respond in the occurrence of an event. So parametric triggers, for example, you've got a big hurdle there to cross with us if it's parametric. And the other thing is, if the collateral is not located in Australia, we're not going to be able to consider it to be an asset in Australia. So that seems to have been, in my experience to date, the two hurdles. We have had conversations already around cat bonds, and they're the two hurdles we face most often. So if people can address those, then definitely I agree with the comments that you made. As time progresses and we start seeing more that don't necessarily have those features, you can see the ICRC changing for those.
Lovely. That concludes. Thank you very much. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Ifan.